Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Exploring our emotions through Disney's Inside Out 2. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's advanced program. Today is June 23rd, and we are continuing our psychology article entitled Joy Meets Anxiety. I'm Linda, and back with me today is Eva. Hi, Eva.
Hi, everyone. Excited to talk more about this amazing movie and what it means for us as people going through a lot of emotions every day.
Yes. So we've been talking about the film Inside Out 2. Of course, this is the sequel to the first movie, Inside Out. Now, it was put out by Disney. It's a Pixar animated movie. And we learned yesterday, it won the Oscar for the best animated feature, the first one. And it made a lot of money. And actually, Inside Out 2 did even better than the first one. So they've been very successful movies. And I imagine that Inside Out 3 will come out. It hasn't been officially announced, but just with the success of these movies, yeah.
They can make a lot because we go through so many phases, as people. Like when you're young, when you go through teenage, when you go to work, and when you go get married, have kids, and you as you age, I think a lot of these emotions either mature or you get introduced new ones.
Yes, yes. I mean, they could go through all the different stages of life.
Yeah.
Okay, we went through, we were introduced to Riley, our main character, when she was born, and through her childhood, going to school, moving to a new place,
yeah.
Right? She's on a hockey team, so dealing with that, like being on the team, being a team player, moving to a new school.
Yeah.
That's something that she encounters here, or like the dawn or the pre move to the school, right? And so could easily cover her going to college, right?
Yeah.
Having her first romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage, having a kid. Yeah, so there's so many, they could definitely continue this series, who knows, indefinitely, cover all the different stages of life. All right, so just to review what we talked about, Joy Meets Anxiety, this article, and from the title, these are the two main emotions, right?
Yeah.
So joy is the main emotion from her five core emotions, and then anxiety represents the new squad of emotions that have come in with the onset of puberty. And yesterday we heard from some of the writers, right, the co-writers and also the director, the creative team that put together this movie. And they were talking about their experiences as kids, right?
Yeah, and how it shaped how they wrote and expressed their emotions, how they wanted to see it come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what struck me was how they said, we wanted to start with the saddest thing in life and work from it. That was like, wow, yeah, this is a very core emotion, I would say.
Yes, because in the first movie, Joy is dealing with sadness. Joy, of course, wants to keep Riley joyful.
Yeah.
She wants to keep her happy, but sadness keeps interrupting, right? Sadness,
she keeps sneaking in slowly, sadly.
Yeah, turning core memories into sad memories, right? That were previously happy and joyful, and she's turning them into sad memories. So she's like the antithesis of Joy. And Joy tries to keep her away. But through that movie or through the development of that plot, Joy realizes that sadness is also important.
Yeah.
All of her emotions are important.
Correct.
To develop and to to become a well-rounded person mm-hmm. and a well-adjusted person. So Riley, in the second movie, she's dealing with new emotions and new events in her life. And yeah, that is where we are now. But yesterday, Kelsey Mann, the director, he gave a little story of like how he was looking through old photos and how that kind of prompted this question in him, like what happened, right, yeah. to him as he got older. Because in his birthday photos, he looked like he got sadder and sadder every over the years. So this question of what happens to joy as we get older, yeah. and that is what they explore in the movie. Have you felt this growing up? Have you questioned, like, what's happened to your joy?
I feel that as you are growing up, as you are going through the emotions, I think you don't know it because you are living in it and you might not feel mm-hmm. the absence or the reduction of it. I feel you only know when you look back, yeah. in hindsight.
Yeah.
People like how he looks at his pictures and he's like, oh, what happened? Like, mm-hmm. when we are in it, I don't think we feel the whole like brevity of it, you know, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm feeling sad now. And I don't know, is that a good or bad thing? I mean, it's good that we get to look back, mm-hmm. but yeah, I guess in that moment, we don't know why we're behaving that way. We just know that I don't feel like doing
yeah.
it. Yeah. There's no reason, you know, especially
in the moment,
a teenager, you don't have the words to articulate mm-hmm. your feelings. You just feel like that.
Yeah.
I remember my parents always asking me, like, why are you behaving like that? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you so angry? Or what happened? You know, just now you were okay. I literally did not know why, you know?
Right.
And the fact that they kept on asking made me even like angrier.
Yeah. And like, just leave me alone.
I know. So I think as you're going through it, you never know why. But through the movie, it's actually interesting because we mm-hmm. get to see like this whole control board, you know, and how the emotions interact. So I guess as an adult, when you look at it, you kind of can understand yourself a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what like this nostalgia brings about, you know?
Yeah.
And how you be like, oh yeah, maybe I better call my mom after the movie to say sorry because you kind of understand why.
Yeah, true. And we don't get this perspective until we're older all the time.
Yeah.
And we look back and hopefully we learn, you know, from looking back and from those experiences and we don't keep making the same mistakes again. And we can understand because as a teenager, yeah, we don't have that knowledge or that maturity
Correct.
To understand or to process it or to get to the root of it. But as we get older, we do gain the knowledge and maturity to be able to do that. So.
Well, I can imagine that this movie series can be very helpful for parents, you know?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Because they can be like, oh, no wonder she's acting that way.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, maybe something happened in school. That's mm-hmm. why she's acting like that, even though she said nothing happened. So maybe that could be good for a new generation of parents who become more aware mm-hmm. of our feelings. Yeah.
Yes, because awareness is key. And I like that they do include the perspectives of the parents, of Riley's parents.
Oh, yeah, we see their stuff as well.
Yeah.
That's nice.
They go in the head of their parents or like the emotions of them, and it's cute because like their emotions are
similar but like
but they have the appearance of the parents, like the mother, it's like, you know, her emotions like look like the mother, mm-hmm, like it's very cute. Okay, so let us hear about the power of joy now.
The power of joy. With all the different plot threats, Riley's struggles to fit in at hockey camp, anxiety's misguided attempts to help, exiled Joy's quest to return and restore balance, man would keep coming back to the central idea. What's the story? This is about joy. Writing an emotional arc for an emotion inside someone else's head while thinking about it in your head, Holstein says with a chuckle. So, it is like three-dimensional chess, but played on a Chinese checkerboard inside a dishwasher. The first movie was Joy discovering the power of sadness, Holstein adds. And this movie, for me, had to be Joy discovering the power of joy.
Okay, So the power of joy. And there are actually a lot of things, a lot of different plot threads going on in the movie.
Yeah.
Riley gets to go to hockey camp, mm-hmm. right? She's awarded this opportunity to go be at this hockey camp. And then we said earlier, anxiety and her new squad of emotions come in, and anxiety has many misguided attempts to help. What does misguided mean? Is it helpful?
Yeah. Misguided intends to be helpful to guide, but miss, you know, it's from the word mistake to like, wants to be helpful, but actually after that, it makes the situation worse.
Right. So she has all of the intentions of helping, but it backfires. She actually does more bad than good and makes the situation worse. And sometimes that it's even worse than somebody setting out to fool you, to go against you, more than, or with someone who has good intentions but end up hurting you rather than someone who set out to, like,
to hurt you.
Yeah. Sometimes, it can be more frustrating.
It's true.
Yeah. Because you can't be mad at them because
they wanted to help.
Yeah, but they messed it up even
more. Yeah.
So that can be maybe a trial. And then we have Joy gets exiled. Mm-hmm. She gets in the chute and gets sent off to the memories where she would send the memories that she didn't want, right?
Yeah.
So way off into like the forgotten area. All right. So Joy is trying to find her way back to the control center, and in order to restore balance, because anxiety is kind of getting out
losing
of
it.
Yeah. And that's what happens when you let anxiety take over.
That's true.
Right? It just goes haywire and everything is off balance and out of sorts. So with all of these plot threads going on, Man still wanted to keep coming back to the central idea, which was about Joy, right? What's the story? It's about Joy. So this question of what happens to Joy, like we said in the yesterday's program, that is the central theme, right? Finding out where does the joy go as we get older. So what does Holstein say?
Well, Holstein says that writing an emotional arc for an emotion inside someone's head, while thinking about it, you know, it's like playing three-dimensional chess, but played on a Chinese checkerboard. So
inside a dishwasher.
So what I can imagine, he's just saying basically very complex.
Yes.
All happening at the same time, very messy.
Yeah, it sounds very convoluted. Like, try to wrap your head around that,
like
right?
Something inside of a something inside of something.
There's so many different pieces that need to fit together.
Uh-huh.
They're part of the puzzle. And all these, like, moving parts, right? So it's very complicated, but that's what life is, right?
It is, yeah.
Especially when it comes to emotions. It gets very messy.
It does.
And so trying to sift through that, that is a huge challenge. All right. So he goes on to say that the first movie was about Joy discovering the power of sadness. We went over that, right? Her attempts to keep sadness from influencing Riley's life.
Yeah.
But she learns that, you know, sadness is also important. And then in the sequel, in this movie, it had to be Joy discovering the power of joy.
Yeah.
So Joy, you had mentioned earlier, Eva, that you felt that Joy was being drowned out by the new emotions.
Yeah.
And so she has to discover the power that she has in herself.
And the voice that she has, I think that was important. That was something important for me. Like, she, you know, sometimes when too many things cloud you, then you're like, yeah, maybe no one wants to listen to me. No one wants to hear me out. Maybe my voice doesn't have the power it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through this movie, I personally learned that, oh yeah, maybe, actually you always had that power. It's just that all of these things kind of just made things complicated and you lose that confidence. And that was what probably he wanted, you know, to Joy rediscovering that confidence that she had.
Reclaiming the power that she has and becoming more self-assured. Because she was very self-assured, like, when Riley was a kid.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how we feel as kids. Like, we feel fearless.
Correct.
Right? As long as we have our parents there or some, you know, a guardian there.
Yeah.
Like, we feel like we have so much confidence and there is nothing to fear.
Yeah.
A relative of mine, like, when she was 3, she was the most confident preschooler I've ever seen. Like, she didn't, you know, she wasn't rude, but I mean, sometimes actually she could be rude, but she was just so confident. She didn't let anyone tell her anything to deter her. And she just spoke, and her stature, like her posture was just so confident.
Yeah.
And as she grew up, she became less of that. And maybe she just grew into her true self, but it's just funny, like little kids, they're just so confident.
Yeah.
And they don't fear anything. Like, not like, unlike now where we have to worry about getting hurt, right?
I know.
Kids don't care about that.
Well, hurting people, I mean, I think it's all part of maturing, but I think as a young kid, you live without consequences. So sometimes you just be like, let's just do it.
Yeah. Or you don't think about the consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You don't consider the consequences. Mm-hmm. But then as we get older, and that's part of maturity, you know, like you said, we do have to think about the consequences because they don't just affect us, they affect other people.
Yeah.
So, maturing and being more aware of ourselves and other people, that is what helps us to be more mature. All right, so let's continue on to our second reading.
Personal experience. They didn't have to go far to find subjects for research. During COVID-19 closures, they got to see kids up close every day at home. But Lefauve didn't even have to look that far to get started. I suffered from anxiety as a teenage girl, she says. So I was very much drawing from my own experience and how isolating that can be. Often, the adults learned from the kids. Mann says his daughter's leanings toward perfectionism have caused her some anxiety. A lot of what my daughter has been able to learn, I've been able to learn from and put in the movie. The whole panic attack scene at the end, he says. Riley is having one and starts to come down out of it. She's using her senses in order to ground herself in the present. It's a technique I learned from my daughter. Holstein, who had a speech impediment as a boy, says that multiplicity of perspectives was key to the film's success. Inside Out 2 is the highest grossing animated film ever with nearly $1.7 billion worldwide. The kid in me wanted to tell the story of that stuttering kid who got hold of his anxiety. The adult in me wanted to tell the story of not wanting to see the joy leave my 7-year-old son's face after every birthday cake.
Okay, so we've been talking about how the creators of Inside Out 2, how they drew from their own experience and from their past to create this movie. And so this section is personal experience. They said they didn't have to go far to find subjects for research because they all had kids at home, right, during COVID. When schools were closed, work was, everyone was working at home, there was shelter in place. So they got to see the kids up close and personal every day at home. So they had their own kids. But Lefauve says she didn't really have to look far to get started. And why is that?
Well, she says that she suffered from anxiety as a teenage girl. So a lot of the things that she was writing was very much drawing from her own experience and how anxiety can, make someone feel isolated.
Yeah. If you allow anxiety to take over, it can very much isolate you because you just think about all the what ifs, all the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
It's basically what anxiety ends up doing to you. You just think and think, oh, what if this? What if that? And it's usually negative. Like, you usually don't think, the best case scenario. It's always the worst case scenario that you're thinking about. So if you're constantly thinking of that, then you end up isolating yourself because there's also this fear that also develops or increases as you become anxious and you think about like all of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
So often the adults learned from the kids. Mann said he learned from his daughters, right? His daughter's leanings toward perfectionism have caused her some anxiety. So leaning is a tendency to do something or to believe in something. And she had a tendency to be a perfectionist. Can you relate to this?
I think that, firstly, yes. And I think that all of us, in some way or another, is a perfectionist. Maybe not to everything in life, but there are definitely some things that we hold close to our heart. And in that, we always seek perfection, you know. If someone loves to cook, then definitely they'll be like, okay, I must make sure I perfect this recipe. But that doesn't mean that something else in life, like cleanliness, you know, they are perfectionists. So I feel that perfectionism, yeah, everyone experiences it, not just like individuals, but everyone can relate to a certain form of it, you know, and I'm like, I must make sure this goes really well.
Yeah.
But maybe something else in my life, I'm just super chill about.
Right, right. It can be isolated to certain aspects of your life. Yeah, I can definitely relate to it. I tend to be a perfectionist, so it's like, oh, like it's not right, and that will cause me to have some anxiety. But as a, I don't know, as a teenager, I don't really think it made me that anxious. Like, I think I've always been a perfectionist. I think as I've gotten older, like, it's contributed to anxiety. But yes, I can totally understand. And so Mann goes on to say that a lot of what my daughter's been able to learn, he's been able to learn from as well. And he could use it in the movie. And what example does he give?
Well, there was a panic attack scene at the end where Riley, she is having one and then she starts to come out of it. And she's using her senses to ground herself in the present. I think trying to pull back herself from the depths of anxiety. And I assume that's how he saw his own daughter go through it, you know. Her perfectionism, her anxiety because of that, like acting up. And he probably saw the whole process of how she used her five senses, you know, whether it's her touch or her sight to pull herself back to reality. And I guess that was how he wrote Riley to present herself as that as well, you know, to just calm herself down and be at one with her emotions, which to me is pretty interesting because, you know, as a child, if you're angry, if you're sad, if you're going through some negative emotion, your parent can be there, you know, to be like, hey, Linda, you know, it's okay, calm down, it's going to be fine. But as we grow up, my mom's not going to be there for me all the time, you know. And it really is up to me to be in touch with my senses and be in touch with my emotions and, like, you know, self-soothe, you know, tell myself, it's going to be okay, Eva. Take deep breaths, you know, and, like, breathe, be calm. And I think that's a good sense of maturity.
Yes, yes, to self-regulate. What she, you know, the technique that she used here is grounding, like physical grounding. Riley does it in the hockey, I guess, timeout box, right? They're sent to when they commit some like
foul or something.
Or they do something, the umpire like sends them off the ice. The penalty box, the penalty box. And so she's in there and she, this is already when like anxiety has taken over and like during the game, she's just so concerned with like being perfect, like getting every shot that she wasn't passing to her teammates. And yeah, she even like knocked into her friend because she was just so out of control, like anxiety.
She's so focused and she's like, I don't do this.
So she's just overwhelmed by her anxiety. And so then when she gets into the penalty box, she starts having this panic attack because like she doesn't know what's going on. She's doing her best, but it's like, and she's just overwhelmed. And by grounding herself, you know, with her hockey stick and, you know, feeling the chair, that she's physically grounding herself to the present, like making sure, like, okay, I'm here. This is the moment right now. I don't need to spiral because she was already spiraling from this, from the, all this anxiety. Grounding physically and mentally and deep breathing. Like you also see that in the movie. She's breathing, regulating her breathing, and that can help a lot, these physical things to calm someone down, especially if they are having a panic attack. And also, you said someone coming over and just patting your back or touching you can also physically ground you. So all of those things are helpful. And so the director, Mann, he learned this technique from his daughter. And we go on to see Holstein. He, when he was a boy, he had a speech impediment, which means that he had something that made him not be able to speak properly or well, like either a physical or a nervous problem that affected his speech. Right. And this would probably cause him a lot of anxiety because kids are mean, you know?
Yeah.
They make fun of other kids who have speech impediments that can't say words properly or stutter. Like stutters when you say the first sound of a word like over and over.
Yeah.
Like apple, you know?
Yeah.
And so this also he could draw from that experience as a kid. So he said that multiplicity of perspectives was key to the film's success. So having all of these different perspectives, this variety of perspectives really helped the film's success. And we learn, what about the success of Inside Out monetarily?
Yeah, it's highest grossing animated film, 1.7 billion worldwide.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. The highest grossing animated film ever in history.
I'm sure some people watched it multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Because with all these plot threads, like you can watch it multiple times and still like
exactly.
learn something new.
You learn different things because it's like, oh, I missed that. Yeah. Oh, she went through that. I didn't know. Because it's very fast paced, I must say.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of things to take note of. So I'm sure people saw it more than once. And it's something that appeals to kids and adults.
Yes,
you know?
That's true.
So I always find it amazing when they make animated movies. Like, yeah, it has a kid element, also an adult element for the parents who take their kids to watch it. Yeah. So the kid in him wanted to tell the story of that stuttering kid who got hold of his anxiety. So he was able to overcome his anxiety. And the adult in him wanted to do what?
The adult in him wanted to tell the story of not wanting to see the joy leave his 7-year-old son's face after every birthday cake.
Right. So he doesn't want what happened to him to happen to
his son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for that joy to remain, right?
Yeah.
Over the years. And so thank you so much for joining us on this program. We hope you are able to take something from this psychology article.
Yep.
But please come back again for our next program. For now, I'm Linda.
I am Eva.
Saying goodbye.